This morning, I stepped over three corpses on my way to work and barely gave them a second glance. A few years ago, that would have made me vomit, or at least lose my appetite. Now it's just another Tuesday in the lovely paradise that is our Slaanesh-controlled city. I sidestepped a puddle of something, blood or maybe the remnants of last night's party, and kept moving, eyes down. The sky was its usual color, a sickly pink-orange haze, and the air tasted like perfume mixed with rot. Just the normal sights, sounds, and smells of my daily commute. You get used to it, I guess. I hardly blink when a distant scream rings out from the direction of the pleasure district. Someone's having either a really good time or a really bad time. On this world, it's often both at once. I just keep walking. A few other haggard-looking folks shuffle along the street with me, heads down, each lost in their own world of trying not to attract attention. Once in a while, I catch myself marveling at how normal all this has become. Then I remember. It wasn't always like this. Not so long ago, life here was different. Not exactly good, mind you, but different. I grew up when this planet was still under the Imperium, back before the cults took over. It feels like a lifetime ago. Emperor-fearing, gray, and brutally orderly. That was the world of my childhood. We toiled for the God Emperor day in and day out. Every morning I'd wake to the sound of the local hab-block speaker blaring a hymn to his glory. My parents would make me recite the standard prayers. Emperor, deliver us from temptation, deliver us from evil. That sort of thing. I mouthed the words dutifully back then, never imagining I'd one day be muttering them under my breath in the literal heart of temptation and evil incarnate. Back then, the biggest worries were making our daily labor quota and avoiding the arbitrator's battens. My family was low-class, ordinary imperial citizens. We worked at the manufactorum or the agri-fields, depending on the rotation, and we attended the Emperor's worship sessions every week like clockwork. I remember complaining about how bland our ration bars were and how strict the curfew was at night. Funny, in hindsight, those are such petty concerns. Little me thought the Imperium was oppressive, the endless work shifts, the boring sermons, the constant reminders that we were one misstep away from heresy charges, and it was oppressive. Just in a very mundane, disciplined way. But it was safe, at least compared to now. No demons jumping out of alleyways, no neighbors morphing into tentacled pleasure fiends overnight. If you died violently back then, it was probably due to a factory accident or a draconian judge, not because you literally exploded from too much ecstasy at a cult revel. I never imagined our dull little world would become what it is today. But looking back, there were signs. Whispers of a new cult in the Underhive, graffiti of strange six-pointed stars and leering faces started appearing on walls. I was a teenager when the rumors really took hold, stories of nobles holding secret parties where anything was allowed, of people disappearing into the night, supposedly to taste forbidden pleasures. At the time, I brushed it off. If the Inquisition hadn't shown up, it couldn't be that serious, right? Innocent ignorance. The turning point came quick and hit hard. One day I was at work, assembling widget components for some administratum order. When the city's vox speakers suddenly fell silent, mid-chant. Then came music, not the martial imperial kind, but something else entirely. Hypnotic drums, a wicked melody that made my skin crawl. Chaos erupted, literally and figuratively, that day. Our planetary governor, a man whose name I've since tried to forget, appeared on the central hololith, dressed not in his usual stately uniform, but in flowing purple robes, eyes wild. He declared our world's liberation in the name of Slaanesh, the Dark Prince of Excess. Just like that, the Emperor was out, and this new nightmare was in. Half the population was too stunned to react. The other half, well, they rejoiced. Turns out the cults had been busy. Workers around me dropped their tools and started cheering this madness. Some tore off their drab uniforms right then and there, painting sigils on their chests in machine oil and blood. I remember seeing one of my shiftmates, a quiet girl who used to lead our morning prayers, laughing as she smeared the 8-pointed star across her forehead. It was like a switch flipped in people's minds. Chaos soldiers, some from our own planetary defense force who had secretly turned coat, flooded the streets. I heard gunfire, screams. The Adeptus Arbites precinct house was set ablaze by midday. So much for law and order. Those Arbites fought to the last, but they were torn apart by mobs of frenzied cultists and something even worse. That's when I saw my first demonette. She, it, pranced out of the smoke on cloven hooves, a lithe purple shape with too many claws and a horrifyingly beautiful face. She moved through the panicking crowd like a dancer, slicing apart anyone who still wore an Aquila symbol or offered resistance. I'll never forget the sight of an arbitrator, armored and armed, dropping to his knees in delirious ecstasy as that demon sliced his head clean off, smiling sweetly the whole time. By nightfall, the city was firmly in the grip of Slaanesh's followers. The Spire nobles threw open the palace doors to the victorious cult leaders and whatever foul allies they had. An enormous icon of Slaanesh, the twin-tailed hermaphroditic symbol, was hoisted right over the old imperial palace where the Aquila flag once flew. I stumbled home in shock, stepping over bodies littering the streets. That part hasn't changed much, I suppose. My parents, they didn't make it. Later, I heard a lot of the pious folk were rounded up that first day as offerings. I try not to dwell on how exactly they died. I spent that first night curled in our storage closet, clutching my grandfather's beaten-up Imperial Primer book and shaking like a leaf. The Emperor didn't feel very present that night, or any night since. That all happened around 10 years ago, though it's hard to keep track of time precisely these days. Since then, my world has been entirely transformed, inside and out. Now, daily life is a twisted parody of what it once was. The city didn't burn down or fall into anarchy after the takeover, not completely. In fact, it almost runs functionally, which is the sickest joke of all. We still have a society of sorts, just one dedicated to Slaanesh. People go to work, produce goods, eat when there's food, sleep when they're allowed, and try not to get killed. Just like under the Imperium. The difference is all in the how and why. Take the upper crust, the nobility. They used to hide their debauchery behind lace curtains and golden Aquila sigils. Now they flaunt it. The noble families, those that survived the transition, immediately swore loyalty to Slaanesh. Many had done so in secret already. These days, the lords and ladies of the Spire live in a perpetual orgy of luxury and cruelty. They rename themselves with absurd titles like Duke of Decadence and Princess of Pain. I'm not making that up. I once had to do a repair job in a Spire lift and caught a glimpse of their high life. Silken curtains billowing in halls painted with psychedelic colors, servants scurrying around with platters of narcotics and spiked wine. And the screams, some of pleasure, some of agony, not that the nobles bother distinguishing. They consider both equally entertaining. The nobility here doesn't bother with subtlety anymore. They'll parade down into the mid-hive streets whenever they feel like it, decked in their feathered masks and garish outfits, plucking random citizens for their amusement. If a noble's eye falls on you, Emperor help you, not that he will. Best case, you end up forced to attend one of their banquets as the evening's plaything. Worst case, you're the main course. Then there are the cult priests and priestesses, the new holy or unholy men and women. In the Imperium, we had the Ecclesiarchy preaching the Emperor's word. Now we have the Cult of Excess peddling Slaanesh's gospel of gratification. They roam the city in sensory overload processions, brightly colored robes that barely cover their scarred or tattooed flesh, ringing bells and playing strange music to lure people to worship. Every few days, there's some kind of public rite or festival we're all expected to attend, or at least pretend to enjoy. I often see the high priest of our district, a man who used to be a straight-laced cardinal before he found Slaanesh, standing atop a hover dais in the square, delivering frenzied sermons about embracing every sensation. He's usually flanked by a pair of demonettes kept as his personal cherubs. Imagine your local priest accompanied by actual demons draped over him like pets. It certainly keeps the congregation attentive. Missing these ceremonies is not an option. If you're absent or even look bored, the enforcers might drag you onto the stage as a volunteer for the next demonstration. I've seen what those demonstrations entail, no thank you. I clap and cheer with the rest, even as my stomach turns. Artisans and performers thrive under the new regime. If by thrive you mean go completely insane with inspiration. This was never a particularly cultured world before, but now every half-baked painter or musician crawled out of the woodwork to embrace the chaos muse. The walls of our hab blocks are covered in lurid murals depicting scenes of ecstatic madness. Some are genuinely well painted, I'll admit, but all of them make you uncomfortable if you stare too long. There's an entire artisan quarter where sculptors carve statues of contorted bodies in marble and ice, and occasionally in still living flesh, an interactive performance piece, they called it. Musicians craft bizarre instruments that wail and screech in mesmerizing tones. We have something called a Symphony of Screams perform every once in a while at the old opera house. They literally torture a choir on stage to produce sounds. People pay to watch. I did not get a ticket for that one, let's put it that way. Mutants and abhumans, once hunted or hidden under imperial rule, now have a curious place in society. Under Slaanesh's dominion, physical oddity is often seen as a mark of the Dark Prince's favor, assuming it's the right kind of mutation. Those with aesthetically interesting mutations, like extra graceful limbs or mesmerizing skin patterns, might find themselves scooped up to join cult dances or serve as exotic servants to the upper class. Meanwhile, those who turned out less artistically, say sprouting a vestigial arm or a face where their stomach should be, just swell the ranks of the low-class rabble. At least they're not purged outright like the old days. In fact, the other day I passed a group of mutants openly running a street food stall, a thing unimaginable in the Imperium. Of course, I didn't dare try their food. One of them had a literal tentacle stirring the pot, and I've learned to be wary of consuming anything warp-touched. Still, it's strange. In some ways, the prejudice against mutants is less now. Your worth isn't defined by being pure human. It's defined by how entertaining or useful your mutation is to the new masters. And then there are the other inhabitants of this lovely world, the demons. Yes, actual warp-spawned entities don't just appear at the big rituals. Sometimes they wander the streets or flicker at the edges of your vision on particularly saturated warp days. It's not exactly common to bump into a demon buying groceries, not that we have grocery stores like we used to, but I've had a few close encounters. Aside from the demonettes that are sometimes kept as temple guardians or shock troops, there are stranger things, shimmering mirages of laughter and hunger that slither through alleyways at midnight, leaving whimpering, blissed-out victims in their wake. I once heard about a small chaos spawn that got loose in the lower city, an amorphous, ever-changing creature of limbs and mouths. The locals managed to corner it and club it to death with pipes. Even a spawn can die if you're desperate enough and have heavy metal objects on hand. Of course, the next day, a couple of those locals sprouted extra eyes and manic grins. A little parting gift from the dying creature's warp taint, perhaps. Point is, reality here isn't stable or safe. Demons and other warp horrors are part of the ecosystem now, however bizarre that sounds. We live in a world where the phrase "don't talk to strangers" might literally mean don't exchange pleasantries with that seductive thing that isn't actually human at all. Despite all the madness, there is some order, if only imposed from above. Slaanesh's hierarchy runs on might makes right and capricious whim, but they know a completely anarchic city would burn itself out too fast. So we have enforcers of a sort. Think of them as a cross between a police force, a cult militia, and a sadistic circus troupe. They wear leather and chrome uniforms, faces often hidden behind leering masks, and they carry shock mauls and whips and use them liberally. Their job? Keep the rabble productive and make sure nobody is worshipping the wrong gods or plotting against the local Slaaneshi leadership. If some cornate gang starts randomly murdering folks in the street, it happened once, the enforcers or the noble's personal guard will swoop in and put an end to it, not out of compassion for us, but because unsanctioned violence that doesn't serve Slaanesh's plan is a big no-no. Likewise, if we workers slack off too much, these enforcers are the ones who'll crack heads until morale improves. They're essentially death squads with a mandate to preserve their master's version of peace. It's law enforcement, chaos style, unpredictable, brutal, and completely one-sided. But it exists. So how does a regular person like me survive all this? By adapting fast. In the immediate aftermath of the takeover, I was honestly ready to die. Between losing my family and witnessing everything I ever believed in get trampled, I wasn't sure I wanted to go on. But self-preservation is a funny thing. After the initial shock, some quiet instinct kicked in and said, "Live." Even if the life is hell, even if each day makes you question your sanity, survive first, despair later. The first step was blending in. I learned very quickly that overt resistance was suicide. I saw what happened to the Emperor's loyalists who tried to fight or even speak up. Public torture if they were lucky, ghastly ritual sacrifice if they weren't. I had no desire to join the Martyr of the Weak club. So I did what I had to. I scraped off my Imperial Aquila tattoos with a rusty knife. That was a fun evening. I burned my collection of prayer scrolls and hid any evidence of my former devotions. It felt like betraying everything I once stood for, and maybe it was, but it kept me alive. The next step, figure out the new rules and play along, just enough to avoid notice. That meant attending the cult gatherings, at least in body. It meant wearing a small Slaaneshi pendant around my neck that I looted off a dead cultist. Better to have some token of devotion to flash if questioned. It meant forcing myself to cheer at the blood sports in the arena, to applaud at the end of an especially graphic sacrifice, to say glory to the Dark Prince. With as much fake enthusiasm as I could muster when the overseers passed by. In the beginning, I was terrified my facade would crack, that they'd see the disgust or fear in my eyes. But people tend to see what they want to see. If you clap and smile and don't cause trouble, you become part of the furniture. And being part of the furniture is a good thing. Furniture doesn't get singled out for punishment or special honors. Furniture survives. Mentally, I had to adjust, too. It's amazing what the human mind can get used to, given time. At first, I couldn't sleep, couldn't eat. My nerves were shot. But you can't live on adrenaline and fear forever. Eventually, exhaustion wins. I found strange ways to cope. One was focusing on small routines, something as simple as tidying my little hab room corner or doing my maintenance tasks meticulously. In a world gone mad, fixing a broken pipe or sorting ration packs gave me a tiny sense of normalcy. Another coping mechanism, you might have noticed, is dark humor. When everything is so utterly insane and horrifying, sometimes the only way to process it is to laugh quietly to yourself at the absurdity. I make snarky little observations in my head about the crazy stuff I see, like I'm a spectator in a really twisted comedy. It's either laugh internally or break down sobbing, and the latter would get me killed or worse. So I choose to find the grim irony in things, like when our new taskmaster at the factory declared, "Productivity is pleasure," and distributed stimulants to keep us working 20-hour shifts. I had to bite my tongue not to giggle at the absurd corporate pep talk vibe of it. Dry sarcasm, even if only in my own mind, keeps me sane. Well, relatively sane. Surviving in a place like this isn't just about avoiding notice, it's also about knowing who to trust, if anyone. You'd think trust would be impossible here, but humans are social creatures, even under the thumb of chaos. Over the years, I've identified a few kindred spirits, fellow survivors, who haven't completely drunk the Kool-Aid, so to speak, or whatever the Slaneshi equivalent of Kool-Aid is, probably spiked with something. We don't have open conversations about how we really feel. That would be suicide. But there are subtle ways we watch out for each other. For example, there's an older man I work with, Marius. He actually knew my father in the old days. Marius plays the role of an obedient, half-addled laborer, but I've caught the glint of the old him in his eyes now and then. Once, during a particularly heinous public spectacle, some poor fool being flayed alive to release his excess of feeling, as the priest put it, I felt myself on the verge of screaming. Marius accidentally knocked over a crate to create a distraction, and in the chaos he whispered to me, "Steady, boy." That simple act kept me from drawing attention. We never spoke of it after, but I nodded to him, and he gave a tiny nod back. In this place, that passes for a heartfelt conversation. There are a couple of others. A neighbor of mine, Alina, is a deft hand at patching wounds and scavenging supplies. She used to be a medikai apprentice before things fell apart. Now she runs a sort of unofficial clinic in our hab block's basement, quietly helping those who can't go to the official and woefully inadequate chaos surgeons. She does it under the guise of hosting drug parties, which conveniently keeps the cultists uninterested or even supportive. Free drugs, why not? Underneath that, she's actually disinfecting infections and setting broken bones. I've helped her a few times, fetching water or standing lookout. We don't talk about the old days much, too painful, but there's a mutual understanding. In a world where true kindness is scarce, even a small act like sharing a clean bandage is basically a revolutionary act. We form these small, silent alliances. They're not exactly deep friendships. We all know that if one of us is exposed, the rest might have to distance themselves to survive. It's a sad reality that any of us might crack under pressure and denounce the others to save our own skins. But for now, we help each other in little ways. A warning here, a cover story there, a spare bite of food when someone's starving. It's the closest thing to community we have. Romantic relationships? Those are trickier. Slaanesh's domain is all about lust and sensation, but genuine love or trust, that's in short supply. Most pairings these days are transient, opportunistic, or orchestrated as part of cult activities. People hook up at orgies or form harems around powerful cult leaders. It's more about status and indulgence than real affection. I've kept to myself in that regard, partly out of caution. Giving your heart to someone is just giving them, or the cult, leverage over you. And partly because, well, I'm not exactly attracted to folks who might sprout demon claws mid-embrace. I do remember a girl I fancied back in the Imperial days, a fellow factory worker named Celeste. Sweet laugh, kind eyes. She smuggled me extra recaf rations sometimes. We were young and awkward, never really got beyond shy smiles. Celeste is still around, astonishingly. But she's not the girl I remember. Now she's Sister Celestia of the Scarlet Bliss Coven. I saw her leading a parade of drugged-up cult initiates last year. She was wearing a serpent mask and practically bathing in the adoration and blood of the crowd. We made eye contact for a split second. If she recognized me, she gave no sign. And me? I just looked away. That little spark of what if from our past snuffed out in that moment. Better to let such memories dimmer. Clinging to them just makes the present hurt more. As part of playing along with the new order, I've seen and done things I never thought I would. Some experiences stand out like horrific milestones on my journey through damnation. Let me tell you about one of them. The time I attended the Grand Festival of the Prince, our city's biggest Slaneshi celebration. It was the anniversary of the planet's liberation, a decade since the day the governor flipped the table. To commemorate, the powers that be organized a citywide extravaganza of excess, and attendance was, of course, mandatory. I dreaded it for weeks leading up. Notices were plastered everywhere. Carnival of ecstasy. All citizens rejoice, or be made to rejoice. Yes, that was the actual slogan. Nice to have a choice, huh? When the day came, the whole Hive City was transformed. Garish banners of every color hung from buildings. Confetti made from shredded silk, and maybe flakes of dried skin, it was hard to tell, rained from the upper spheres. Roving bands of musicians, some human, some not entirely, filled the air with an incessant, feverish rhythm. The normally grimy main thoroughfare was scrubbed and painted with swirling patterns and inscriptions to Slaanesh. They had set up a huge central stage in Unity Plaza, ironically named under the Imperium, and still ironically appropriate now where the main ceremonies would occur. My work team and I were herded there by mid-morning, all of us given festive masks to wear. Mine was a cheap porcelain thing painted with a leering grin. The idea, I guess, was to make the crowd look gleeful, whether we felt it or not. Thousands of people packed the plaza, shoulder to shoulder. Nobles in elaborate costumes occupied the best vantage points, lounging on balconies above. We regular folk crammed in below, sweating, anxious, and trying to act thrilled. The festival kicked off with the High Oracle of Slaanesh, formerly our governor, now basically a demagogue with a fancy title, making a speech. He stood on the dais, resplendent in a shimmering outfit of pink and gold, arms gyad as if to embrace us all. His voice was amplified unnaturally. It felt like he was whispering directly into my ears, despite being hundreds of feet away. He spoke of how far we'd come, how we were all free now to experience true pleasure and sensation, unshackled from Imperial repression. The crowd roared on cue, thanks to the enforcers prowling the edges. I clapped my hands and tried to look inspired, though I mostly felt nauseous. Then came the performances, if you can call them that. A procession of what I can only describe as cultist performance artists took the stage. One group engaged in a sort of choreographed torture dance. Yes, exactly as weird as it sounds. They had captives, maybe captured loyalists or simply unlucky citizens, who were being slowly altered in time with the music. Limbs were surgically, or sorcerously, removed and reattached in artistic positions. Flesh was sculpted like clay, while the victims were somehow kept alive and conscious. It was "For the glory of Slaanesh, a live sculpting of living pain," the announcer proclaimed. I remember my knees nearly buckling at that point. Through my ridiculous grinning mask, I clenched my jaw so hard I thought my teeth would crack. Next, a cadre of Emperor's Children Astartes Chaos Space Marines sworn to Slaanesh made their appearance. There were four of them, enormous in Baroque power armor painted in riotous colors. They were greeted like celebrity heroes by the cultists. These were the infamous Noise Marines. I'd heard of them, but never been this close. They carried strange weapons that looked part guitar, part cannon. When they started playing, if that's the term, I understood why people say their music can kill. A wall of sound poured out, a deafening, discordant cacophony that physically shook the plaza. Some people in the front rows literally dropped dead or passed out from sensory overload. Either a blissful death or their heads just couldn't handle it. Those of us farther back clutched our ears under our masks. I felt blood trickle from one ear, and my vision wavered with each reverberating bass note. And yet, the crowd cheered like this was the best rock concert ever. Better cheer or you might be singled out, right? So I cheered, though it probably came out as a pained groan. Eventually, the Noise Marines stopped, bowing theatrically. The sudden absence of sound was like coming up for air after nearly drowning. My heart was pounding. I've never been so grateful for silence. The grand finale of the festival was, unsurprisingly, a mass sacrifice come celebration. The Oracle announced that Slaanesh was watching and that we would now share our ultimate joys with the Prince of Pleasure. This was the cue for the enforcers to start grabbing pre-selected individuals from the crowd. Those unlucky souls had probably been marked days prior. About a dozen men and women were pushed onto the stage. Some were cult volunteers. You could tell by the fanatical bliss on their faces. But a few were plainly terrified commoners who'd been chosen to spice things up. One of them was a young man from my hab, a quiet baker's apprentice named Joran. I saw his eyes wide in panic as they dragged him up. He caught my gaze in the sea of masked faces, and I could see he recognized me, silently pleading. There was absolutely nothing I could do. The ritual that followed, I'll spare the worst details. Let's just say it started as an orgy and ended as a bloodbath. And by the end, it was hard to tell which participants were screaming in pain and which in ecstasy. Slaanesh doesn't distinguish after all. The air became thick with the coppery smell of blood and an odd sweet scent, perhaps the demonette's musk. A shimmering rift opened above the stage as the climax of the rite approached. For a moment, I thought something truly apocalyptic was about to emerge. A greater demon, perhaps. But it closed just as quickly with a crack of thunder, presumably a sign of the prince's satisfaction with our offering. When it was finally over, I was trembling head to toe. The plaza was a mess of fluids and confetti and limp bodies, but people were cheering like we'd won some great victory. In a way, we had the victory of surviving another celebration without losing our minds or lives. I stumbled back home after that, peeled off that stupid grin mask, and vomited for a good 10 minutes straight in a gutter. Happy anniversary, right? One might think after living through a citywide carnage party like that, I'd avoid any and all gatherings for the rest of my life. I certainly intended to, but in a twisted way, life under Slaanesh finds you even when you hide. A few months after the festival, one of my co-workers, a fellow by the name of Raal, kept pestering me to join him for a night out. Now, Raal embraced the new normal more than I did. Not a full fanatic, but he enjoyed the fringe benefits like the drugs and wild parties. He insisted I needed to loosen up, and that he knew just the place in the lower city where we could enjoy ourselves without too much oversight. I was skeptical, and rightly so, but I also figured blending in occasionally meant not always shunning what others indulge in. And maybe a small part of me was morbidly curious if I was even capable of having fun anymore. So I went along. Emperor, forgive me, I went. The place was called the Velvet Vortex, one of countless unofficial clubs operating in the warren of old Manufactorum tunnels under the city. To get there, we slipped down a rusted hatch in an alley and followed a glow of pink lights and muffled bass. No obvious guards at the door, just some half-naked greeters smirking at us, checking for concealed weapons, or maybe just copping a feel. Inside, my senses were assaulted immediately. Incense smoke hung thick in the air, tinted a purplish color by lumoglobes. The music was actually not terrible, a throbbing beat with an eerie melody on top. At least it wasn't at lethal noise marine volume. The club's main chamber was packed with bodies moving in that drugged, half-ecstatic way you see at cult dances. People of various social ranks mingled. I noticed low-level clerks, some off-duty enforcers, artisans, even a minor noble or two slumming it in simpler attire, though their polished skin and surgically perfect faces gave them away. Mutants, too. A couple of lithe figures with glowing eyes and extra arms danced on a raised platform, apparently the evening's entertainment. In the dark corners, other silhouettes hinted at more intimate activities taking place. It was overwhelming, to be honest. Ral hollered something about getting drinks and disappeared into the throng, leaving me standing awkwardly near the entrance. I didn't dare venture onto the dance floor, where people were doing things that made dancing around a golden calf back in the old scriptures. Not that anyone here remembers those. Look tame. Instead, I edged toward the bar, thinking maybe holding a drink would give me a prop to blend in. The bar itself was a repurposed piece of industrial machinery, probably an old cogitator bank, now draped in velvet. The bartender was a tall woman, I think, with elaborate tattoos and, well, six arms. Very efficient at her job, I'll give her that. She flashed me a sharp-toothed grin. "First time here, sugar?" she purred. I just nodded, trying not to stare at the wriggling tentacle that was one of her six limbs. "Try this, on the house. You look like you need to unwind," she said, handing me a glass filled with a luminous green liquid. It glowed in the black light. I'd learned not to accept random substances, but refusal might offend, so I took a cautious sip. It was surprisingly sweet and fragrant. Not bad. I could feel a warmth spreading through me almost immediately. "Good, yeah?" the bartender giggled. "Enjoy, honey." At first, the drink simply relaxed me. The lights seemed softer, the music pleasantly fuzzy. I remember thinking maybe this wasn't so bad after all. I even managed a half smile, scanning the crowd with slightly glazed eyes. That's when things got strange. The edges of my vision took on a pulsing glow. The smoke in the air started forming patterns. I saw faces in it, leering and laughing. I blinked and the faces were gone, replaced by streaks of color that shouldn't exist. I looked down at my drink to steady myself and nearly dropped it. The liquid was swirling on its own, shapes writhing in it as if alive. I swear I saw an eye blink up at me from inside the glass. My heart hammered. The warm relaxation flipped to dread in an instant. I stumbled away from the bar, trying to find Ral, suddenly desperate for a familiar anchor. The crowd parted before me like a living organism. People's faces. Emperor, preserve me, their faces were melting or changing. One moment they had eyes and a mouth. The next, just a smooth blank slate. Then features again. Different ones, as if I was cycling through a masquerade of souls. Music distorted into a cacophony of whispers and moans. I felt something brush my leg. I looked down and saw a carpet of slithering, colorful serpents where the floor had been. I yelped and staggered, only for that blink to reveal it was just the tiled floor. Hallucination. It had to be. I tried to remind myself I drank something in a chaos club. Of course, it was spiked with Emperor knows what. But reason didn't help. The visions kept coming. At some point, I tripped, or maybe something pushed me, and I went sprawling onto a plush couch or pile of cushions, felt like flesh, though I pray it wasn't. My vision was swimming. A figure loomed over me, one of the dancers from the platform, I think. She had eyes like twin suns and an unnatural smile. Her body bent down toward me in an impossible arch. She whispered something in my ear that sounded like my name, but stretched out and echoing like Jonas. Except that's not my name, and I have no idea how she'd know any name of mine anyway. I remember her hand cold on my cheek, and her fingers felt too long. Claws pricked my skin. Or maybe that part wasn't real either. She laughed, a sound that seemed to come from inside my own skull. "Let go," I think she said. "Why do you resist? This could all be so blissful if you just let it happen." Classic demonic temptation line, right? Even in my drug-addled state, I had a spark of defiance. I did not want to end up like those zealots with permanent creepy grins. Mustering all my will, I jerked away from her and managed to blurt, "Get away!" Maybe I didn't enunciate. It probably sounded like a drunken groan, but I pushed her off, or perhaps she let me. The next thing I know, I was on my feet, shoving through the writhing crowd, desperate for the exit. Laughter, or was it screaming, chased me as I clambered up the hatch ladder out into the cool night air. I gulped it down like water after a desert march. I realized I had been laughing too, a hysterical, choking laugh that turned into a saw once I finally collapsed in an alley outside. I don't know how long I lay there under the pale moons, coming down from whatever warp spice that drink had been laced with. Eventually, I dragged myself home, swearing never ever to do that again. The aftermath of that misadventure was more than just a searing headache. The next morning, I woke up on the floor of my hab. I must have fallen off the cot in my delirium. Sunlight, well, dim, polluted daylight, streamed through the cracked window. My mouth tasted like perfume and ash, a nasty reminder of that club's air. I stumbled to the little mirror shard I keep, wanting to see if I looked as awful as I felt. One glance and I recoiled. My eyes. They weren't the brown eyes I'd always had. The whites were shot through with vivid pink, and my irises had a faint golden ring around the pupils. In short, I looked like someone who'd been touched by the warp. I panicked. A change like that, however subtle, could be dangerous. It might fade, or it might be the beginning of something worse. Some mutations start small, odd eye color today, full tentacled face tomorrow, you never know. If the zealots noticed, they might decide I was marked for initiation or sacrifice. If the enforcers noticed and thought I was trying to hide a blessing, they'd be just as likely to drag me in. Desperate, I rinsed my eyes with stale water and a dash of Amasek, burned like hell, but maybe the alcohol would help. I even whispered a half-forgotten prayer. "Emperor, deliver me from the curse of the mutant." Yes, old habits die hard, especially when you wake up with possibly demonic pink eye. To my immense relief, by midday, the coloration in my eyes had dulled back to something like normal. Maybe all the crying and flushing helped. Or maybe it was temporary to begin with. Either way, I threw on tinted goggles for the day, just in case. People might assume I was just hungover or trying a fashion statement. Since then, I've been extremely careful about what I ingest. Many here beg Slaanesh for gifts, like extra sensory organs or altered features, but me? I'll stick with the standard human package, thanks. I've seen what happens when those gifts go wrong. Of course, as much as I try to avoid warp-tainted substances now, I can't avoid the warp itself. Living in this environment, it seeps into your mind one way or another. Sleep is rarely peaceful for me. When I finally manage to drift off, often to the distant throb of music or screams echoing through the night air, the nightmares come. Sometimes I dream I'm back in the Imperium, a comforting dream at first, where I'm a child reciting the litany of protection. But then the prayer twists on my tongue and I realize I'm actually chanting one of Slaanesh's mantras while my childhood home melts into a pulsating flesh temple. I wake up with my heart pounding, whispering apologies to a god emperor who likely isn't listening. Other nights, the dreams are pure chaos from the start. I find myself in an endless carnival, bright and loud. Masked revelers laugh and dance, and I'm the only one without a mask. I wander, searching for an exit, but every door leads me right back to the center of the party. A figure will approach, often the image of someone I cared about, like my mother or Celeste. But when they remove their mask, their face is a demon's or a horrific visage of excess. They'll say in a sweet voice, "Stay with us, it's so much easier." And part of me will want to give in. Those are the worst nights, when I can feel my resolve slipping in the dream, when the temptation is not just abstract, but delivered in the guise of people I once loved. I've woken up more than once with tears on my face and a scream caught in my throat, and occasionally, "Emperor, help me!" A laugh instead, as if some sick part of my brain enjoyed the nightmare. That's when I really worry about losing it. On especially bad nights, I swear I wake up to shadows that move on their own in my room, or faint giggling from the corners. Maybe just echoes in my head, maybe tiny warp entities playing pranks. Either way, I've taken to sleeping with a dim lumen lamp on. Darkness in a chaos city is a gateway to too many things. Sometimes I hum a lullaby my mother used to sing. It was actually a prayer in disguise. The words, "Protect us, O Lord, in our time of darkness," have turned into "Protect me from the dark prince's gaze just for this night." I don't know if anyone hears, but doing it helps me cling to a sliver of myself, the part that remembers gentler things. It's darkly funny sometimes, when I detach enough to compare my former life to this one. The Imperium was no picnic. I was a drudge among billions, underpaid, actually not paid at all, just rationed, and overworked, praying to an emperor I would never see. Every day was toil, prayer, more toil, and the looming fear of heresy charges if you stepped out of line. Now I'm a drudge among a slightly smaller number of lunatics, still not really paid except in the currency of not being flayed today. I work probably even longer hours than before, except now they claim it's for my own pleasure. Newsflash, assembling gun parts or harvesting narcotic fungi in a dank field for the cult's profit is not anyone's definition of pleasure, no matter how they spin it. Back in the day, if I had a complaint about my boss, I kept it to myself or risked a lashing. These days, complaining isn't even a concept. You're either ecstatically praising how great everything is, or you're dead. At least the Imperium allowed a person to grumble under their breath. Here, I have to grin like a fool, even when I'm miserable, or someone will notice. Under the Imperium, we had strict rationing, boring but edible nutrition bars. Water recycled till it tasted like metal. Under Slaanesh's rule, the nobility feast on rich banquets, while us common folk get whatever is left. Sometimes that's actually tastier fare than the old rations, I admit. The nobles throw out perfectly good food and we make use. But other times they hand out these stimulant-laced candy things for breakfast to keep energy high. Ever tried working on an empty stomach filled only with what is essentially a combat drug? I don't recommend it. Discipline then versus now. Ha! The Imperials would flog or execute you by firing squad if you rebelled. Here, punishment can be far more creative. You might find yourself the star of a torturous art piece, or transformed into something inhuman as a lesson. Some days I genuinely can't decide which was worse. The Imperium demanded my soul and worship in exchange for protection, and they still failed to protect us in the end. Chaos demands my soul and worship in exchange for, well, nothing guaranteed, just the chance to exist another day. It's a case of dystopian hell versus twisted carnival. Pick your poison. On balance, I miss the dull, quiet fear of imperial life. The constant, insane roller coaster of chaos is exhausting. At least under the Emperor, I could reasonably assume tomorrow would be the same as today. Here, I'm never sure if the next day will bring some new horror or pleasure that I have to endure. I sometimes catch myself nostalgically thinking of those mind-numbing daily prayers and the drab safety of routine. Then I laugh, a bitter, hollow laugh, at the fact that the Imperium has become my fond memory of better times. That's how far gone things are. The planet of genocidal bureaucracy and zealous witch hunters feels like a fond childhood home compared to here. And yet, here I am, still alive, still putting one foot in front of the other. I suppose that's the human condition in the 41st millennium. Whether under the Emperor's stern gaze or Slaanesh's seductive grin, you just endure. I've become an expert in surviving without really living, if that makes sense. Keep your head down, find small joys where you can, and they are very small, like the rare times I find an old pre-heresy book and spend a secret hour reading it, or when I manage to joke quietly with Elena or Marius about some absurd new decree without getting caught. You might wonder if I have any hope left. I wonder that too. Hope for rescue? Not really. The Imperium isn't coming back for us. We're tainted, an afterthought at best. In their eyes, we're probably as damned as the cultists. Maybe they're right. Hope that things will get better internally. Also, no. If anything, the corruption sinks deeper every day. I've seen formerly decent folks lose whatever remained of their sanity or morality as the years pass. Maybe one day I'll be the one drooling in the front row of a Slaaneshi rally, having finally broken. That thought terrifies me more than death. But despite the lack of hope, I carry on out of sheer stubborn will. I like to think there's still a tiny kernel of me inside that they haven't been able to snuff out or reshape. As long as I keep that alive, through sarcasm, through memory, through quietly helping a neighbor, I defy them in my own meek way. Maybe it's pointless, but it's what I have. The shift whistle, or rather, the discordant howl they use now, will sound soon, and I'll head off to another day's labor. I'll pass the neon shimmering statues and the gibbering street preachers. I'll nod along to the required chants and make myself useful enough to be ignored. Same as yesterday, likely the same tomorrow. Emperor willing. Or should I say Slaanesh willing. Old habits die hard. In this place of never-ending excess and horror, being an unnoticed, ordinary person is the closest thing to freedom one can get. So I'll embrace my anonymity, cling to my dry humor like a shield, and survive. It's a thin, quiet form of resistance. Just a man in a hellscape choosing to remain himself for one more day. And if the Dark Prince is watching me, I hope he's bored out of his immortal mind.